According to the teaching of teachers, that is, the argument runs as we, I'm going back to this morning's message to bring it up to date, to bring us into focus, to get our minds back in gear. James 3 begins, "Be not many teachers, because we shall receive a heavier judgment. It's very common for men to stumble. Moral failure is common to all, and especially this sin of the tongue, gossip, swearing, sins expressed by, caused by, centering in the tongue. And this is a special danger because the teacher has a ministry in the area of the spoken word. And because the teacher, for two reasons, first of all, because the teacher has a ministry in the area of the spoken word, you must be careful what he says. And because the teacher is in a place of leadership, the mistakes that he or she makes, the moral failures, affect more than just themselves, affect many. When one falls, many usually fall with them." And we see this. This is so true. How many times, in your knowledge, have you known churches that have been seriously hurt because of the failings of the leadership of the church? And so if we're a preacher, an elder, a deacon, or a Bible school teacher, if we fail, it is a very serious thing, and we shall receive a heavier judgment. And then we have the development of the theme of the tongue, how it has an influence far above and beyond what you might expect. And we emphasized this morning how the tongue has a negative influence. It's like a forest fire that's caused by a small match, and a great deal of harm can be caused by a careless word. And we also emphasize the fact that a great deal of good, that the converse is true, a great deal of good can be produced by a thoughtful word. And I'm closed on this note this morning. I think we ought to realize that lives could be changed, that people could be encouraged and helped, that the fellowship of the church could be enhanced if we would simply have the courage and take the time to speak that good word that we ought to speak. We pointed out that person, if we choose to, because we are imperfect and because we all make mistakes, if we choose to, we can destroy the fellowship of the church by the careless word and always tell the truth, for instance. And I pointed out that we build the fellowship of the church, we build each other's lives, we build marriages, we build homes by choosing to emphasize and talk about the good that's true. And the power of the tongue can be seen in this as well. The power of a spoken word. I tell you, I freely admit tonight that there have been times in my ministry when I came very close to quitting. And the thing that kept me in it was this, that God would send somebody, and they, sometimes just in passing, would say a word of kindness or appreciation or just understanding and sort of get you back in there, doesn't it? And you know, sometimes it just does us good in our problems if somebody just comes along and says that they care. And so we have the power of the tongue. It's a negative power. It can be a positive power. With the same tongue, verse 9, we bless and we can curse, you see. We can do good, we can do bad. Okay, now, and so the first verses 1 and 2 of James 3, we have the warning about the great responsibility of teachers. Verses 3 through 12 is this great theme on the control of the tongue. Now, verses 13 through 18 we're going to be dealing with tonight talks about the true wisdom of the teacher. The teacher, the leader in the church, who is true of everyone, but especially true of the leader in the church, they should receive a heavier judgment. The leader in the church that cannot control his tongue, and as I say, this is a very difficult thing to teach because we're also guilty of this. We all say things we should not say and don't say the things we should say. And how foolish is the one who's going to be a teacher to not control his tongue, his or her tongue. And so in contrast to the very foolish teacher who falls into a heavy judgment, who falls into the condemnation of God because of the careless word or the unkind word, in contrast to this, we have the wise teacher. And I'm glad that James 3 ends on a very positive note. "Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom." Wisdom is the theme here. Wisdom is all the way through from verses 13 through 18. "Who among you is wise and understanding?" See, okay, we have a person who in contrast to the foolishness that we've already talked about, one who is wise. And what is wisdom? What is wisdom? If I asked you to define in one word what wisdom is, or in one sentence, could you do it? You know, the world is we are being today inundated by a wave of information and knowledge.
and an absence of wisdom. And wisdom is not the accumulation of facts. Today, in the technology explosion of the Western cultures, we have amassed more information about more things than man ever has. Do you know that there has been more real progress in knowledge? As far as facts are concerned, concerning the material universe in our lifetime, than the whole history of the world up to, by our lifetime, I mean this generation. Do you realize that there are people alive today who saw Neil Armstrong walk on the moon, who were alive to read in the newspapers of Kitty Hawk when Wilbur and Orville Wright made the first man heavier than air flight? Up to the invention of the automobile, beginning at the turn of the century, do you realize up to that time that transportation had not changed since the Garden of Eden? The animal-powered vehicle was still being used, and it was basically the same. Do you realize that until Thomas Edison, that men were lighting their homes by the same power that they used in the Garden of Eden, the open flame? And technology has exploded in our age, and yet man is just in more danger than he's ever been, in danger of destroying himself. Why? Because he has knowledge and he has no wisdom. And wisdom basically is simply seeing things from God's point of view. You can just put that in your little black book and write it down. That's what wisdom is. Wisdom is seeing things from God's point of view. And no matter how much we understand, if we do not see things from God's point of view, we are foolish, very foolish. Now look what he says. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. The book of James is practical. We keep coming back to this. If any man's wise, let him lead a consistent life. Let him show by his good behavior. Remember the great section we had the last chapter on faith and works? You show me your faith without your works, he says. I'll show you my faith by my works. If any man's wise, let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. Now what does that verse mean? We're not going to understand it unless we see that he's still talking about the teacher, the leader, the one who would assume a role of leadership responsibility in the local church. So we have the contrast of wisdom in verse 14. But, that is, if you're foolish in that you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. The test of a true teacher is his wisdom. And in verse 14 we have the warning against jealousy and faction. Now, what does he mean here? Lying against the truth, because of selfish ambition, being arrogant and lying against the truth. Look what we have here. We have here the picture of a teacher, of a preacher, of a Bible school teacher, of an elder, anybody who's teaching anybody anything in the local church. We have one who tailors his message for the purpose of self-aggrandizement. That is, a man who will preach or teach whatever will build up his stature in the estimation of his students, of the learners. Look what it says. If you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition, that is this was a great problem in the early church, those who were jealous of the apostles. We see this reflected in so many verses in the epistles. Bitter jealousy. Look at 1 Corinthians 13, or 1 Corinthians 12, 13 and 14, talking about written against the bitter jealousy caused in the first century church. And so here's a teacher who desires to be well thought of. He wants to be president of the North American. He wants to have his name in who's who. He wants to be asked to speak at the great gatherings of the church, you see. And so what does he do? He wants to be loved. You know, some people can take anything but disapproval. This is a real problem in our society, and it gets into the church. One of the reasons I'm convinced that education is in deep trouble, public education, at the school level or the college level, is because so many of those who are making policy do not have enough self-confidence to withstand disapproval. And as soon as the students disapprove of anything, they immediately panic, pull out their hair, call it to a stop. They call the students in and say, "Oh, now, how could we change things so that you would approve of us?" And so the colleges are closing down. There's mayhem in high schools, even down into the grade schools, because of this prevailing philosophy. Yeah. So here's a teacher who cannot stand disapproval. He wants to be well thought of at all costs. This is the selfish ambition to build up his own reputation. He is arrogant. And so what does he do? In the process, look at the last part of verse 14, he lies against the truth. And there are many ways of lying against the truth. The easiest way to lie against the truth is to fail to preach at all. Do that? And so he tailors his message. He trims his sails so that he will not hurt anybody. Now, we're going to see if this is exactly what it means as we continue. But do you see this? Now, I'm glad this appears right here, because we have this balance. This morning we talked about speaking the good word. And I carefully emphasized, and for this reason, because as we take James 3 as a whole, that we can help each other by speaking the truth to each other. There are good things about each one of us. There are bad things about each one of us. We have problems. We have weak spots, but we have strong points in our lives. And the point I was making, that it's just as easy to talk about the good things in our lives as it is the bad things, and therefore build bonds of love. But if we do this at the expense of the truth, that is, if we become those who never speak up about the wrong in our own lives, who never talk about problems, who never issue a clear call for repentance, then we are not expressing love. We have become a bunch of pie-eyed sentimentalists. And so the picture here is of a man who would never preach the truth, even though, and sometimes the truth is a very painful thing, because he desires above everything else to be popular, and so he lies against the truth. Now, this is a real problem. Let's continue in our text. This wisdom, the man who's wise, you see, it's a converse kind of wisdom. He's the man who is wise enough to always manage to be well thought of. I can think of a few. Well, anyway, he always. You know, there's some. This is a real danger. I wrote this in a sermon one time. I preached at a seminary chapel called Jeremiah, the Reluctant Preacher. Forget what I called it, and James Smith, who wrote a commentary for the College Press study series, put the sermon in his commentary on Jeremiah. And I pointed out in the sermon how that Jeremiah was reluctant. He quit the ministry. You remember when Jeremiah quit? He said, "Lord, just don't ask me to preach anymore. I'm done." Then he said, "Well, the word is a fire shut up in my bones," and he had to preach it. And Jeremiah was one who used in the name of God, being Jeremiah inspired of God, used the most clinical, scathing language that anybody ever heard, and he got in deep trouble over it. He said Israel is chasing after the gods of Canaan like a camel in heat chases after its mate. Israel is chasing after sin and luxury and lust. Every man is neighing after his neighbor's wife like a mule neighs after corn, you know. Now, that's pretty straight, isn't it? That's pretty clinical. And I contrast this with the modern trend. We preachers get into this. We can word something so smoothly that, and you know, we can just dress something up in innocuous language in such a way that it hardly hurts at all when you preach it. We can word it so nicely, and sometimes I think we get too good at this. And we don't come out and say what needs to be said. And this is the kind of wisdom, you know, where this wisdom that is wise enough in a worldly kind of way, which is so polished, you see, and so smooth that it never hurts anybody. And a man who's wise enough, you know, if a man in this world, if he trims his sails and trims his message in a worldly, in a wise sort of way, as the world counts wisdom, can go far. Look what he says. This wisdom that does what? That trims the truth for selfish ambition, for self-popularity, and therefore ends up being a liar. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above. Verse 15. This is earthly, natural, demonic. This isn't godly wisdom. This is not seeing things from God's point of view. This is seeing things from man's point of view. Do you see that? That is, a man, from taking the worldly point of view, says, I will say whatever the people want to hear me say. I will teach that which will make me popular. I will avoid those issues which might be controversial. I will go along with whatever I need to go along with, lest I lose my retirement. I had a preacher tell me that one time. We spent about 4 hours studying the plan of salvation. When we got through, I said, well, you realize that what you're preaching is not the truth. He said, yes. I said, what are you going to do? And he said, nothing. And I said, you're going to go ahead and preach what you've always been preaching? He said, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And I said, why? He said, I'm an older man, and if I preach what you're talking about, I'd lose my job, and I wouldn't have any retirement. The Lutherans had given him a retirement program, and he was going to keep it. As far as I know, he'll retire on it. And the world, this is not of God. This is earthly, natural, demonic. This wisdom which seeks to get through. For where jealousy, now in the context here, this jealousy of other teachers wanting to be popular, and selfish ambition exists, there is disorder and every evil thing. Verse 16, chaos. Listen, when the teachers in the church, regardless of whether they're teaching the little ones or whether they're preaching from the pulpit, whether they're teaching a Bible school class or whether they're teaching in the home, when teachers in the church start teaching that which men desire to hear rather than that which men need to hear, we're going to have chaos and disorder, and no good will come of it. It does not produce a strong church. It produces anything but a strong church. Where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder in every evil thing. But the wisdom from above, in contrast, verse 17, is first pure, then peaceable. You see that? See how it fits in? What does it mean, first pure and then peaceable? Gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. That is, it's all these things. It's first pure, then it's peaceable. Gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, you see? Right down the line, preaches the truth as it is, without hypocrisy. Now, this is the divine order. First pure and then peaceable. Hebrews 7 starts out talking about the priesthood of Jesus. He was a priest after the order of Melchizedek and the king of Salem. Melchizedek means king of righteousness. King of Salem, king of Shalom, means king of peace. But he's king, but he's Melchizedek first. You hear that? Jesus is king of peace, of purity, and then he's the king of peace. The wisdom from above is first pure. That is, it's first is the truth, and then it's peaceable. And if you can have both, fine. But if you can't have both, it must be first of all pure. That is, it's the wisdom of a teacher who makes sure that he preaches the truth in love. And I tell you, I don't think you don't really offend people that much if you preach the truth in love. In other words, I don't mind a man telling me that I'm going to hell as long as he doesn't sound like he's glad about it. Now, and it must be first of all pure. If our doctrine is not pure, and this is an unpopular thing to preach today. I have received letters from ministers who have reprimanded me for articles that have been published because there's this overriding concern today to be popular and to not stir the waters. But listen, if we lose the truth, if we lose the purity of New Testament Christianity, then all the peace in the world will not save us. The wisdom from above, this wisdom of this wise teacher, is first pure, straight, it's true, and then peaceable. You see the divine order? And you see, that's the way the plan of salvation is. We have peace with God. How? Through our Lord Jesus Christ. There is no peace with God until there's purity. That is, we have the peace that we have, Romans 5, is in the forgiveness of sins through His blood. We are never at peace. We have people trying to be at peace with God who have never become pure before God. And you cannot do it. The divine order is first pure, that is forgiveness, and then we have peace with God. And it's a lot of sentimentalism that tries to speak of a peace with God where there is no forgiveness. Listen, If we are not forgiven of our sins in Jesus Christ, if we're not saved by this grace, then we are at war with God, and there is no peace. And so the divine order is always first pure, then peaceable. Melchizedek, then king of Salem. King of righteousness, then king of Salem. And so this wisdom which was from above, James said, the wisdom of this wise teacher is one who tells the truth in love. And note this, it's not a matter... And again, we tell the truth. We must tell it in love. Jesus brought the truth, but he brought it in love. It's gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering and without hypocrisy. You know, I'm convinced of this, and I think we need to learn this. He who sows in tears shall reap in joy. And if we would go to people and tell them the truth in a loving way and let them know that we really care, I believe it will have a great effect. And so there's a difference, you see. And here, let me say this right here, between in this matter of the wisdom of the wise teacher, which is first pure and then peaceable, that there's a big difference between telling people and teaching people. It's the easiest thing in the world to just tell somebody. And maybe you can tell them the truth. But once you've got them told, what do you have then? It's the shortcut. It's an easy thing to tell people the truth. And it's something altogether different to teach people the truth. And I look back on my younger years, and I have to ask God to forgive me. There have been times when I've been content with telling people the truth. And I have to confess that. I'm ashamed of it. I went home feeling very smug and very proud of myself. Well, I've told them. I told the boys in my Acts class, these boys are freshmen, they're going to be preachers. You know, they go out, these weekend churches, and just like me, you know, I think back how, you know, you go out and preach the gospel, and who hires them? What's their first ministry? Why, it's some little church down the hill of Ohio or Kentucky or Indiana or Pennsylvania that hasn't changed anything in 40 years. They're singing holy, holy, holy to start the service, and if they didn't sing holy, holy, holy to start the service, the Lord would come and take away their candlestick, and that right quickly. And they're, nothing's going to change, you know. And so they go out, and they sit down, and then the second Sunday there, brother, they unload. They tell them. And I said to the boys in class one time, I said, I know it's very human. It's a very temptation. It's a very good temptation to go out, and here these men have been elders, and you just go up and you just blast them. I said, all you do is you undermine the confidence of the church, and you make a fool out of them, make a fool out of yourself. So to the boys, you go in and you take these men, you spend 10 years and teach them. And then if you still want to blast them,